I'm Tom DeSourcy. You've tuned in for compelling conversation on hot topics impacting Canada's fire service. This is Firefighting in Canada, the podcast. Today on the program, a look on the inside of not only a career change, but what I would consider an enhancement. According to his website, he has spent over 24 years of navigating challenging landscapes. Fire chief, an author, a columnist, a podcast host, and more importantly, a very good friend. Surprised he actually has the time to be on my program. So joining us today from his locale, his home on Salt Spring Island, British Columbia, it's Arjuna George. AJ, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Fantastic. Glad to be on here. As always, yep.
Build it up. It's awesome to talk again and chit chat. It's been, and I read the part about 24 years. Can you believe the last 24? Can you believe the last two?
Incredible. 24 years. It honestly felt like maybe 10 in sometimes, and then sometimes it felt like 50 years, right? So it all depended on the day. But yeah, the last 2 years just flown by since my retirement. Salt Spring Fire, and I'm just blown away with how things have developed and how my life has really pivoted, for sure.
For those, again, across our country that may not know the story and your story, and tell us about Salt Spring Island, and again, go back a bit, you growing up there and getting involved in the fire service.
Yeah, well, the fire service was never on my radar, honestly, when I was a young teenager and kind of leaving high school. My goal was to be a chef, to own my own restaurant, to cook for people. And I just love seeing people smile and just get some satisfaction out of eating good food, right? And as you know, we love food as well, both of us. And so I kind of thought that was my route for sure. But one of my cousins said, you know, you honestly got to try this volunteer thing on Salt Spring Island. It's a blast. That's where I was living. That's where I wanted to raise my family. So it was kind of a no-brainer to consider that at the moment of, you know, give back to my community that I plan to stay there for a long, long time. So I was living in Victoria at the time, moved back to Salt Spring. And within a few months, we had our first kid. And then about 14 months later, I had another kid. And so it was pretty much after my daughter was born, the second child, that I was like, okay, I think I can maybe commit to some time here now. And my cousin, who had been in there for probably 2 years by that point, said it's a blast. You're going to learn so much. You're going to meet some great people. I'm like, sure, let's give it a shot. And you know, within probably a short 2 months or so, I definitely got the fire bug. And because I really truly think that looking back on it, that I had two young kids at home, the reason I put so much effort in it, I wanted to make sure I came home to them every day. So I trained. I did every course you could imagine. I went to everything I could imagine. Had some great mentors through the way. And I just kind of all started to roll and to happen. And amazing, in 4 years from volunteering, I landed the first firefighter job career on Salt Spring Island. So just 4 short years, I still felt very green. And 4 years into it, I was taking the duty officer vehicle home. I was an incident commander. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Lots of goods and bads to kind of joining a fire service that young, having that much responsibility as well. I learned so much because I had my hands in so many different kind of aspects of the fire service. But on the flip side, I was also in my early 20s. So there was goods and bads to that kind of rolling out so fast for me. And yeah, just loved it. And I joined in 2001 was when I landed the career job. And as you know, September 11th, 2001 was quite the year to be in the fire service. So I'd already been in for a few years, but just seeing that brotherhood, sisterhood kind of unravel, the camaraderie across the world, respect to the fire service across the world, it really just opened my eyes up and just made me even, it fueled my engine even more to learn more about the fire service. And I kind of moved up through the ranks from there. I went straight from firefighter to captain. And then captain to training officer, assistant chief, deputy chief, and then finished off as the fire chief for the last 5 years with Salt Spring Island Fire Rescue, which is my hometown. my only fire department that I ever worked in. And I kind of feel blessed that I was able to work in that station for my whole career versus hopping around to, you know, different cities or different towns. But unfortunately, due to burnout, I had to retire early, much earlier than expected. I'm still got many, many, many years of work left in me and passion left in me that I kind of had to pivot. And I really wasn't sure if I was going back to the fire service or not. But I love it so much. There's still a huge passion in my heart for the fire service. And so I went through a bunch of change, and the last couple of years have been my pivotal moment of going from a fire chief to launching my own business, launching my own career, totally repivoting, but still having a very, very close connection to the fire service.
And Salt Spring Island, for those that don't know, is a unique situation in terms of a fire department. And I want to know more about the makeup of the department then. It's you say a volunteer department. There was some paid aspect to it. Mutual aid doesn't exist. You know, you're on an island, and a fairly large island at that. A little bit of background about the demographic.
Yeah, Salt Springs is on the west coast of BC. Our population right about now is about 10 to 13,000, somewhere in that frame. It's a tourist mecca. Definitely people come here for the tourism aspect. The climate is amazing. I got palm trees and cactus growing outside year round, and banana trees. And it's definitely the banana belt of Canada, what they people say. And yeah, the population, and we're on an island. It's actually the biggest of the Gulf Islands. The population goes to about 30,000 or so in the summer. And the summer used to be just kind of 2 months. It was like July and August kind of thing. And now it's pretty much from March till October is our tourist season now, which has really expanded. And the fire service, when I first joined, there was a few chief officers that were paid, no firefighters paid. And as everyone who knows the fire service in the 1990s, it was a different beast than it is today. PPE, training, you name it, it was a totally different world. But flash forward to kind of where I was in the fire service in my last 5 years, we had a union environment. So we had the IFF 4467 in there, as well as about 50 paid on calls, give or take, on a consistent year-to-year basis, which was pretty healthy for a community our size.
Call volume? I mean, yeah. Were you guys busy as a department then to warrant that amount of people?
Yeah, we're running about 700 calls a year. But that, like you said in the kind of intro, there was mutual aid is non-existent for Salt Spring. We do have agreements with the Outer Islands that are much smaller than Salt Spring. They can come and assist us, but it's probably maybe a tender, and it's probably the next day. So maybe good for a wildfire, something like that, but not much good for a MVI, a complicated technical rescue, or anything like that. Even a house fire, not very useful for. But they were there for wildfire, and we did use them occasionally, and we did go support them occasionally as well. But for the island itself, we were pretty much a standalone fire department. So we had three different stations that were, because the island is so big that we need to kind of spread those out. And the call volume, yeah, it went from, you know, probably about 150 when I first started up to roughly around 700 on average every year. And being where we have no mutual aid, we kind of have to help bolster that a little bit. So that's why when I left, we had 8 career staff and about 50 volunteers. And now we're up to 12 career staff and roughly around the same POC volume. But the big change since I left is there's a deputy chief now, which is critical because that's one of the reasons that I unfortunately burnt out was I just had no other resources, no support in that management level. And then also just the fact that the 24-hour shift that they're working now, they're actually, you know, there's full coverage. There's no more duty officer. We have people there at the station 24 hours a day, which is really great for public safety and increased response times for sure. That's something that I always thought the fire service really needed was that full 24/7. I was skeptical that it would ever happen in my career or my lifetime. But I'm very happy that it did roll out that way, because it's been something in the works for a good decade of working towards staffing our number one station with at least a couple people to make that response a little happier.
You talk about and refer to burnout, and I would like to hazard a guess that until you started speaking about it and eventually ultimately writing about it, that this was not a term on the radar, so to speak, as being commonplace. And now I hear it everywhere. And maybe it's because it's the same, maybe it's the same theory that when you go buy a blue car, all of a sudden everyone has a blue car. You know what I mean? But I mean, I'm hearing that. Is that your case as well? It's starting to stand out?
Oh, 100%. I think all the mental health discussions are starting to stand out more and more. And burnout is now considered, you know, it's a mental health challenge that somebody goes through, because your nervous system is fried. Your whole body is in a state of fight or flight response, which is a mental health concern. And for myself, yeah, I never heard the words burnout. I was told quite often that you're working too much and you will have a heart attack, but nobody ever said burnout. It was always a heart attack or something like that. You're going to die on the job doing this because you're working too much. And I honestly took it with a grain of salt. I wouldn't say I necessarily ignored it, but I definitely took it with a grain of salt that I'm fine. I'll keep ticking along. And I find that with a lot of people that I talk to now, that it's hard to realize that you're going through burnout. It's hard to realize that you're having a mental health challenge until it kind of rocks you. And that's when it kind of wakes you up a little bit. And so, yeah, my vision now is to support people prior to burning out. So spreading that message, and I talk about burnout often. Like you mentioned, I wrote a book about it. And I think since COVID, it's definitely 10x'd in the conversation as well. I think a lot of people were struggling through COVID. And burnout is kind of just starting to creep its head out, where people are starting to get back to their regular routines. And it's starting to appear more. Plus the WHO, which is the World Health Organization, has also looked at it and noted it as a, you know, world phenomenon that we have to address. It's not considered a mental health condition per se, as in the DSM, such as anxiety or depression or something like that. But they are looking at it as a rising concern in organizations.
It's not just a, I guess, a coincidence that it, maybe it is, that it's a, you're a fire guy, you're a fire thing, and you use the term burnout. I mean, in the world of marketing, it makes total sense. But at the end of the day, burnout happens to anyone and everyone, no matter what profession you happen to be in, if a profession at all.
Yeah, the kind of the common traits of somebody who experiences burnout are usually the high performers, the go-getters, the ones who excel in their careers, the CEOs, the bosses, the entrepreneurs, the business owners, as well as the ones who are put under a lot of pressure, such as frontline workers, nursing, hospitals, police, ambulance, paramedics, and of course, fire.
You talk about it, as you say in the book, you referred to it, and Burnt Around the Edges is the title of the book. Just delve into the behind the scenes a bit here now. I mean, knowing you for all the years that I have, and we talked about the books that you've read and the authors that we've met over the years at presentations and speaker events, to ever think that you'd actually be one of them in terms of writing, what's that like? I mean, what was the process when you said, I'm going to write a book? How hard was that in 25 words or less? I mean, more than that, but what is the, how,
or less.
I mean, you're a columnist. We both write in the magazines, but again, to write a book, I mean, I don't know where to begin if I wanted to do that.
Well, it all started with, I hired a coach. Actually, I had three coaches when I was going through my burnout recovery. And it's kind of, as people listening to this right now who are in the fire service, they know how hard it is to leave the fire service. And so when you're forced to retire early, it's one of those things that you really have to struggle with, of like, what is next? What's next for me? Especially I'm in my 40s. It's not like it's, you know, I'm approaching retirement age. I still have many years of quality work left in me. And so it was a bit of a, you know, what's next kind of moment. And so I hired some coaches to kind of support me through that and kind of let me see some vision and see what was ahead of me. And one coach said, what's one thing in the world that you've always wanted to do? And instantly, as soon as they said that, was write a book. I've always wanted to write a book. Definitely an avid reader. Got bookshelves full of books everywhere. And I was like, but it's never going to happen. That will be something maybe in another 10, 20 years, I'll write a book. And she challenged me right there. And then is like, why are you waiting? I'm like, well, that's, yeah, okay. That's a good point. Why am I waiting? So I was on my deck having a cup of coffee and she left the session. It was at my house because it was kind of during COVID. And that day I started to write the book. And basically what I did was just a big ledger notebook. And I just started brain dumping everything that was on my mind. So it didn't really make sense of, you know, in order or anything like that. It was just dumping all my thoughts onto the paper. And that turned into a couple of notebooks over time. And then I kind of bite the bullet and actually hired a printing company, Friesen Press, which is they kind of support freelance authors. So it's not necessarily a published book. I self-published it, but with their support. So they helped with the cover design, the editors, all the kind of putting it all on Amazon, putting the ISBN number on it, barcode and everything like that. So they really helped push it, especially for a first-time author. I thought that was a worthwhile investment. And the name Burnt Around the Edges was with me since day one, has not changed. And the reason I picked that name is because I truly felt like I was burnt around the edges, but I had a fire within inside of me still. So I wasn't fully cooked. That's kind of how I think of it, as I wasn't fully burnt through. I was burnt around the edges. And I just needed change, essentially. I needed some change in my life, some mix up. And what I'm doing now is that mix up.
So the cooking thing came back.
It did, 100%. It's like a Chicago rare.
I think now how's the book done? What I mean, and what's your reaction to the way people have reacted to it?
Well, when I first put it out there, I was like, it's a very vulnerable book. It definitely shares stuff that I would probably never have shared 5 years ago, only because I was a guarded person. And as a fire chief, I really felt that I needed to be guarded at some times. I couldn't be vulnerable. But now, knowing that's false, actually a fire chief demonstrates vulnerability is actually a superpower for them to have, and actually will gain much more respect through their firefighters. So I've changed my mindset about being vulnerable with people, and now essentially I'm an open book about everything. So I really just wanted to help one person. If somebody was going through burnout like I was, wanted to read it, I had no clue that it was going to take off the way it did. I've had some amazing feedback come back saying, you know, this book will save lives. Every firefighter, every officer should read this book. It should be in the fire schools. There's all these different things. I'm like, wow, I did not think this was going to have the same impression that it's getting on people. So yeah, it's been a whirlwind, and it's just over a year that it's been out. October 31st of 2023 was the 1 year anniversary. So it's been an amazing journey. And I just put the second edition out there, and talking about vulnerability is like, I wanted to put this book out. I did not want to sit on it. I did not want to, you know, write it and have it just sit on the shelf in draft mode. But when I put it out there, I put it out there with mistakes in it. There's spelling in it. There's issues with the cover. There's issues with grammar. And my perfectionism would have said, no, don't do that. Never post that out there to the world. But I let that go and said, I'm not super hung up on that. I just want the message out there. There's a couple of spelling mistakes. Yeah, I'll clean that up later. So with a second edition, it's cleaned up quite a bit better. And I don't know if everyone's ever noticed yet or not, but the actual cover had the wrong name on the cover. So if you have a copy of Burnt Around the Edges, it's a collector's item now because it's got the wrong name on it.
Okay, I'll check that. I'll go back and look at that now. After this, again, I know there's another book in the future, but you told me that there's even a couple more before that. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I'm working on a couple books right now. One that's really important to myself, which is a little different than the burnout, because I, you know, I'm more than just burnout. I have a huge passion for leadership. And this is a book about self-leadership. So leading yourself as a person versus leading other people. And that's, for me, I think that's one of the first places that people got to look at is leading themselves first before they are, you know, in the capacity to lead others. So that's one book. And then I'm working on another one right now with Dr. Linda Hoops down in the US. And we're co-authoring this one. And this will be about firefighter resilience and strategies for people to work on their own resilience as firefighters. Great book. That should be coming out fairly shortly. And then I'm also working on one that I just kind of released an announcement for, which I'm super excited about, which is Beneath the Helmet, Stories of Hope. So Beneath the Helmet is my podcast, and a branch of that is Stories from Hope. And what I'm looking for is stories of hope from other first responders across North America, the world, who can share ways out of trauma, mental health, any challenges they had in the fire service or other first responder agencies, and really share there is hope for those who are maybe, you know, not seeing that hope so clearly. So it's going to be almost like a chicken soup of the soul kind of style, where it'll be many short stories from real people sharing real stories that will kind of boast that hope for other people.
And you certainly can come to my home in Hope, BC, and launch it if you want. I mean, you want stories of hope? I got stories about hope. No, not about hope, but
yes.
Anyway.
That sounds like a great deal.
And you stole my title, but for my book, but nah, that's fine. So I've heard now about the World Cafe, and yes. I mean, I'm sure others have as well, but tell us, what is the World Cafe about?
So World Cafe is basically it's a facilitation model that's been around for a number of years. So this winter, I actually took a program where I got certified in facilitating that. And I loved it so much that I was like, this is a great way for people to have small group conversation, get meaningful dialogue, go deep, and really solve some problems or issues, or just go deep into a subject. And I was like, okay, so how can it end? Usually a World Cafe is at least 2.5 hours long, minimum. So to do a World Cafe, it's 2.5 hours long. And what I've kind of done is a World Cafe inspired event. So the same concept, but it's usually only done in 1.5 hours. So it's a little less in depth than the full version. And some of them can be a whole day World Cafe. And what I've done is kind of crafted into what I call a kitchen table talk. And it is essentially a 1.5 hour online discussion with people in the fire service, active or retired, talking about one subject. For instance, we talk about leadership in the fire service. That's the theme of the conversation. There will be three crafted, curated questions that are very detailed. And usually the first question is more personal, but everyone in a small group, so a group of like 4 or 5 people. So if you do it on Zoom, it's little breakout groups of 4 or 5 people in a breakout room. They sit down and have a conversation about what they know about leadership in the fire service from a personal aspect. And then after 20 minutes or 30 minutes time, everyone goes back to the main room. There's a second question. Second question goes a little deeper into that first question. Usually more like maybe your department. So we're thinking a bit more larger scale now. And then we rotate. So you're always meeting with different people and you're getting connections with different folks. You go into another breakout room with different people, talk about that conversation for another 30 minutes. Then you come back to the room and usually there's a third question that's usually a bit more global even. So what could the fire service do better in leadership, just as an example? So we start small and keep growing. And what I've found is the power in those conversations, because they're so small, it's not a big group. Everyone has a voice. Everyone can throw, you know, little tips and tricks of what they've experienced themselves. People can listen. So last time we had it, we had a junior recruit who I think was on the job for like 2 months. And then we had fire chiefs in the room as well that have been doing it for 30 years. So it's pretty amazing to see the conversations that the junior folk bring up and the senior folk bring up and how they can support each other. And I just found we've done 4 of them now, and just super amazing conversations that happen. So I try to offer that once a month online. varying times to allow for different time zones. So I try to do a morning one, and then I try to do an evening one. And it's been very, very informative, and everyone's just got a lot out of it for sure.
You're a fan of the term a nugget of information, a little nugget, a big nugget. But I want to leave today with a nugget, if you will, if you could offer to that fire chief, that firefighter that's listening anywhere in Canada that is again starting out and shouldn't be afraid, I guess, is the message, or should they be, about things like burnout and stress? And how do you recognize, and again, not getting depth into the program, but at the end of the day, what should you be watching for? And what's that piece of advice to the firefighter or the fire officer in a typical Canadian fire department that you'd offer today?
Yeah, like you say, that's a whole podcast episode on its own, but I truly think it's about learning about yourself. So if I could kind of summarize that as a nugget. So once again, back to that self-leadership. But also, I went through a lot of ignoring my signs. I had anxiety that was building up that I'd never had before. I actually felt more confident as a officer than I did as the fire chief as years went on. I actually lost confidence, which is just bizarre, because you think as years go on, you actually would feel more confident. And so I think the secret there is knowing yourself and taking your mental health seriously. Like, every single person who's listening to this right now will experience some sort of mental health challenges in their life, guaranteed. It doesn't mean it's going to be a long stretch, or doesn't mean it's going to be career ending, but everyone who's listening will have some challenge that they have to deal with and navigate. And to do that, you need to know how do you respond to stress, how you respond to burnout, how you respond to trauma. And the only way you can do that is learning more about yourself. And so that really takes some introspection. Maybe it takes some time to, you know, just be by yourself. You know, as a fire chief, I was never just by myself thinking. I was always do, go, 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 or with people. But I've really found the power of just being by yourself and actually just kind of meditating on your thoughts. And I'm not saying meditation, that works great as well, but just being with your thoughts, you know, journaling, whatever that looks like. And just kind of getting to know yourself just a little bit better. That would be my nugget.
Congratulations. And again, thanks. Thanks so much for doing this. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Likewise. It's been an honor. And I look forward to all the other podcast episodes you put out.
Thank you for joining Firefighting in Canada, the podcast. For more episodes, visit firefightingincanada.com.